Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my associate Dan DuBose has joined already, I believe. Dan, are you out there?
I'm out there. It's Dan. Good afternoon.
Very good.
Good morning.
I'm sorry. Say again. I stepped on you
good
there.
Good afternoon or good morning.
Oh, yes, that's true. It's good morning here in Thailand. In any event, as we normally say when we land each week, that just because you listen to this show and you hear us talk about certain strategies or certain real estate opportunities, as the case might be, although that's typically more on our Sunday morning show, don't go do this on your own. Please consult with your existing advisors. If you don't have advisors that understand real estate, private partnership syndications, then go to our website if you would like and fill out our intake forms, and we will be happy to consult with you to see if we can sync up to what you might be contemplating and help you do it correctly. Dan, before we get started on today's show, I wanted to mention an article that I can't remember if I sent this over to you to take a look at or not, but it's something that we've known, but I guess we don't really talk about it all that much. But, you know, we do talk about the need for planning as opposed to simply reporting what happened a year ago when it comes to your tax returns and tax reporting. And, you know, now we've entered into that zone or that time of the year where all of a sudden the final extensions are approaching. We just got through the final S-Corp and partnership returns here this past week. We're still alive, by the way. It is rough for us old guys, but we did make it through. And now we got to, it's just an onslaught. Now we got to do it again with the 1040s that'll do this year. The good news is we have until the 17th of October because the 15th falls on a deadline. Correct, Dan? Have you checked the calendar to see how many days we have remaining?
It's we get to
three
get
more,
to have
two more.
Two extra days to do all that pressure work.
That's right. And I know that doesn't sound like much, but you're talking to a guy that on my VPN here overseas, I log into a server in L.A. just to get two more hours on the deadlines. And if you don't think that matters, you're wrong. It's a big-time help for me. You'd be amazed how many extensions we get knocked out in that last 2 hours. Anyway, there was an article, the title of which, and I'm trying to think, let's see, it was a Bureau of Labor Statistics report. I can't remember where I actually pulled this off online, but the bottom line is, for 2021, Americans spent about $16,700 in taxes to the IRS while forking over $15,500, in other words, less, for food, clothing, and health care. Would you have guessed that, Dan, across our client base? I guess we probably would. Most of our clients.
Yeah, maybe even worse than that.
Yeah, that could be, but in any event, and although people, I'm going to keep on reading this article, although people are still spending more on taxes and living costs, the gap between the two is down from 2020, where Americans spent $17,000 on taxes and $13,000 on the other categories of expenses. It's also the smallest difference between the two costs since 2017. That's pretty telling as to why you might want to plan. I think we could eradicate that level of gap between those two with probably almost any of our clients with a few little changes. Maybe pay the children, if they qualify, some money. You know, that's up to $12,000 a child that you can squeeze out tax-free to the child and deductible by the parents if you have a trade or business. So making some changes like that, it's fairly low-hanging fruit, not that hard to execute. And anybody that has a trade or business or that perhaps wants to execute some entity strategies that we are going to discuss today, we're finally getting out of the gate on that discussion, and there are ways to use family limited liability companies where we invest through that vehicle. Your children are involved. They help analyze. It's a way to educate them. It hits on so many cylinders. And one of the cylinders is that, you know, potentially, depending on how we structure it, how old they are, we can't pay a two-year-old to review the latest private partnership memorandum that we're thinking about investing in. Can we, Dan?
No, it needs to be reasonable. Reasonable.
Right.
Here is
so,
the key word.
But bottom line, we can pay director's fees and or, W-2s. I'd have to think through that on the W-2s. Well, actually, I think as long as they're less than 2% owners, we could. Correct, Dan? And the LLC.
That's right.
Yeah. So in any event, I know we're just teasing with these references, but in all seriousness, if you've got kids that are, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 on up, it's something that you probably should consider if you're investing with non-retirement funds. But you probably have other assets that we still could utilize in a family vehicle. But in any event, we are going to start that discussion today. And so let me get on through this article. The report concludes that the average American failed to keep up with the rising cost of living impacted by rampant inflation that remains persistently high. It underscores President Joe Biden's claims earlier this week that his bold and decisive, that's in quotes, action over the past 2 years has spearheaded significant progress. And we understand in Mr. Biden's world, that's probably a true statement. Correct, Dan?
In Joe Biden's world, yes.
Yes. Speaking as someone that's on the Harris County GOP, what do they call that group, Dan? Steering committee or something?
Republican Party.
I'm sorry, what is the Republican Party? Okay, so part of the RNC,
Harris County, I guess,
at the local level. A recent Gallup survey, however, found the share of Americans who say inflation is causing financial hardship has risen from 49% in January to 56%. So well before the Russian-Ukraine, I don't know, I guess we could call it war. It's not just a military exercise, as I think Mr. Putin likes to claim. So well before that, 69 million households were already being forced to make cutbacks. But hey, when you're the president, you get to, I guess, express your reality. And when you've got a media that's complicit in helping you maintain that, sometimes you may get away with it. A worrying 12% of the survey's 1,570 respondents said they were experiencing severe hardship that was lowering their standard of living, a rise on the 9% who said so at the start of 2022. So anyway, I think everybody knows the reality, and if you filled up your gas tank lately, or I don't know, I was in a grocery store here in Thailand this week where it seems like only the stuff I like has gone up. Right, Dan? It's never the stuff that I wouldn't buy. But, you know, if you like those mint Oreo cookies, well, by gosh, it's $12 a package over here in Thailand. I don't know what they go for at HEB. But, you know, some things in life are worth it, though, Dan. And I have to acknowledge, I figure, well, I'm saving big money on those two-time or three-time-a-week foot, leg, and neck massages I get that I can afford to splurge when it comes to a few incidentals. But in any event.
Mint cookies are an incidental these days.
Say again? I'm sorry?
Mint cookies are an incidental these days.
Well, they are, and I was just in, speaking of other hard goods, I was just in IKEA yesterday, or last night actually, here, and I know we turn our nose up at IKEA. I shouldn't admit on the air that I actually like going in that place. Let me tell you something. When you're halfway around the world and you need something to fit a square room that's engineered to fit, you're going to like IKEA because they've got something for everybody at different quality levels. I don't have to preach to the fans of IKEA. I know there's some of our listeners that like it just as much as I do. But I'll tell you, some of their food stuff, that smoked salmon they have is now off the charts. It's literally $10 for a 200-gram, I think it was, package. That's a lot. But anyway. Okay, well, Dan, let's pivot and talk about entities. And, you know, one of the things that we see a lot in our practice, not so much with real estate, thankfully, but it does happen, and so we've got we think we've got some strategies to redress that, is where people are using S-corps for ownership of real estate or investing in real estate. And we've got a list that we've come up with of 20 reasons not to use S-corps, but rather to use LLC or partnerships. Dan, do you want to start on that list, and maybe we can supplement it with some our own war stories?
You know, S-corps are getting high on the IRS hit list these days. They like to look at them and audit these because of the, particularly because of the reasonable compensation issue for officers or officer owners of the company. It's a, you know, it's a way to go grab some easy money from an audit for a salary that the IRS might consider not, let's call it, high enough, where they're taking more salary or less salary and more distribution from their accumulated account. It's a highly technical thing to get into with the S corp, but it's something where the IRS can really get some easy funds unless you plan properly.
Yeah. And I could go further and point out some other things. Well, we've got them a little bit further down the list, so I'll hold off. But there's no question that the small business S-corp type corporations' audits have skyrocketed by, at some estimates, I've seen as high as 100 to 145, 150%. I have not seen that across our client group, but you know, in fact, it seems like I've been hearing about the IRS is coming after S-corps now for, I don't know what, Dan, the last 20, 25 years.
Yeah,
I haven't had
forever, it seems like.
Yeah, I haven't had one audit. Have you had many with your group?
I have not, but we, you know, if we do, we're planned out to have that reasonable salary in place so we don't have that problem. But still with real estate, it is not the best way to be owning.
Well, right. There's other reasons for real estate, except for perhaps, and I would even give you reasons why this isn't a good exception, but perhaps for someone that's a dealer or, you know, doing flips. And we'll talk about that here on the next bullet. But I wanted to explain something just because we're assuming people understand what reasonable compensation is. And reasonable compensation is the overt salary that you might pay the owner of a small corporation. And you have to understand that just like big corporations, when I invest my money in a small corporation to maybe go manage, you know, for my management business to manage my real estate, which is separate and apart from the entity that might own the real estate, we hope, you have both a compensatory component where you're actually performing services, but you're also an owner, an investor, if you will, in that corporation. And what does that give us, Dan? Why do we like that?
It gives us an interest that we can used for making the distributions from the earnings of the company.
That's right. Return on investment is what you're saying.
Return on
your ownership. Right, your ownership interest. That's correct. So we're able to pay out distributions that are not subject to the FICA and Medicare that get charged on the W-2. And if you've got a small company and you're paying the entire profits out on a W-2, like many or most, I would say, small business owners, you are overpaying on your total tax bill because it's not all or shouldn't be all taken out in the form of a taxable W-2. You should be taking some distributions to recognize the return on investment, assuming you've got profits instead of W-2. Let's go on to number two. What's the second item on our list? It's kind of along the same line, I think. Dan, go ahead.
It can cost you extra dollars because you can be considered a dealer. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, that's right. I mean, if you're running a business doing flips, I'm sorry, say again.
You put yourself into an operating business, let's call it, rather than a real estate management company or a real estate
investment
owner
company.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, right. So the fact that you're buying properties, fixing them or not fixing them, turn around and selling them, which is what we would describe as a flip. That income type, the gains you generate, is treated differently for tax purposes than if you buy a property with the intention to hold it as an investment, regardless of whether you eventually flip it because someone walks up and offers you a too-good-to-be-true offer as you're repairing the property. But the bottom line is using an S-Corp overtly and saying, hey, I'm going to separate all my properties, which is things that most CPAs, including ourselves, have advocated through the years until we've gotten a little bit wiser to the approach that is being taken on audits. But using an S-Corp for flips is really a blatant admission, Dan, of the costlier dealer status of being in the flip business. And it impairs our ability to avoid or do what we call dealer avoidance planning to try to show that, hey, every property we buy is going to be an investment unless something unusual were to happen. Now, obviously, if you're buying 20 properties a year and you're turning around and selling 20 properties shortly thereafter, that's going to be a hard argument, but it's still an argument. And if you've got the entity structure set up correctly and you've documented your investment criteria, et cetera, it's still something that can sustain scrutiny. Let's go with number three, Dan. We've kind of already alluded to it, but go ahead and read that one.
More payroll filings because of an S-Corp. You know, if you're in S-Corp, we talked about the reasonable salary. Salary is a W-2 item, not a 1099 item. With the salary, you've got 941s, 940 state filings to do to be in compliance from get all your taxes paid to all those different taxable entities that want your money.
Whereas right, with, and then yeah, and they, then
just.
Yeah, let me move to number four, and then we're going to compare and contrast these first four because they kind of all fit together. The fourth item is the S-Corp is subject to more IRS scrutiny and controversy over the issue of what you mentioned earlier, Dan, reasonable compensation to shareholders. Now, let's take the LLC counterpart, and let's talk about the difference. First of all, 2% or greater shareholders are not paid a salary and wage. Correct, Dan? How do we pay those folks?
You might pay it as a guaranteed payment. Is it? Are you talking about
that's
in
right.
the partnership formation? Yes.
That's exactly right. So if we're going to pay compensation to individuals for undertaking services, it's going to get paid as a guaranteed payment. No withholding. That individual is responsible on their own personal side to pay estimated tax if they're going to owe tax at the end of the year. But that's a lot easier and a lot less, staticky than having to run a payroll, make payroll tax deposits, file, as Dan said earlier, 941s, the quarterly payroll tax reports, the annual 940 federal unemployment, the state unemployment, Texas Workforce Commission. That's what you've got to do for payroll. And then, oh, by the way, W-2s when you get to the end of the year. And so with guaranteed payments.
Don't forget to file them, because that's nasty stuff if you don't forget it. We've had that happen before, and it's quite costly. I mean, it was inadvertent, of course, but man, is it ever costly.
Yeah. Well, in any event, guaranteed payments are a lot less intensive, and that's what an LLC, again, 2% or greater owners can be paid via the guaranteed payment. So let's move on to number five. We're turning the corner from payroll issues, but those alone, in my book, are a reason. Just those four we've already gone over are a good reason to consider a properly structured LLC or multiple LLCs working in concert. And we're not going to get into that strategy today or those strategies, but we will be discussing those in the weeks to come, because it's interesting how the LLC, with what we think is coming with 87,000 more IRS agents, it's probably going to become the entity of choice for even active business owners. But we're going to save some of that for the next few weeks. Go ahead, Dan. Number five on our list.
You know, basis is a very important part of an S corporation for deducting or recognizing any loss that may happen. And real estate does typically have a loss in its early days, probably certainly within that first 5-year period when depreciation might be so heavy. But you cannot, in an S corp, you can't deduct losses in excess of basis, and that's true in a limited partnership or in a partnership LLC entity as well. But with an S corp, you may have loaned money, you may have borrowed money from a third party, but that third party does not count for your basis. That's a real stickler piece within the S corp status too. The money you borrow from outside third party is not counted toward your basis. And if your loss comes up to the amount you have invested, let's say in the stock of the company or in the equity of the company, you can deduct up to that point, but you may have gone and borrowed some money from
right, let's just call it what it is. It's leverage. So if you borrowed leverage or you borrowed money and the loan didn't come to you, in other words, the bank didn't loan Dan DuBose, it loaned DuBose, Ross, et cetera, money, well, then that loan does not get counted in our basis for whether or not we pay losses. And this is actually the next bullet, I'm going to go ahead and mention it. If you made an S-Corp distribution that the ability for you to make it was because you had borrowed money, what would otherwise be tax-free if it happened in an LLC could end up being taxable to the S-Corp shareholder if it's more than their basis. Think about that, Dan. How often that probably happens and people don't even understand what's going on. But bottom line is S-Corps do not get basis. S-Corp shareholders do not get basis for loans that are made to the company unless they're going through the shareholder or shareholders, and then they get to share to the extent they're both on the debt. And obviously with real estate, there's not a piece of real estate you're ever going to invest in that doesn't have leverage. That's how you make money in real estate, is the ability to borrow. You know, it's down a little bit right now on average, but let's just say anywhere from 65 to 80% typically of the cost of acquiring the property, because that lender is willing to take, you know, 4 or 5, now they're getting up into the 6% annual interest rate. They're willing to take that piece and let you have the remaining profits that their 65 to 80% share generate. And so you don't make near as much money if you don't have leverage. But that's why you will never invest in our favorite wealth creation strategy, which is real estate private partnership syndications. You'll never invest in an S corp. You'll never see it. It's going to be an LLC, or it could be a limited partnership. LPs are still prevalent, not nearly as much anymore as the LLC, but the LLC is made for real estate investors. I mean, it's amazing how most of the benefits line up with that. Dan, let's move along because we've got a lot to get through here. Number seven, and this is a doozy, and trying to think if I've ever had a client that fell into this trap. I don't think I have, but I tell you what, this is the thing that makes the hair stand up on the back of accountants' necks is termination of an S-corp. Let's say you inadvertently terminate it. Like, I don't know, you take on a new shareholder that doesn't meet the criteria that you can't involve. They've got to be U.S. citizens. Maybe you went over the number. I know, what's the number now, Dan? Did it go up to like 100 here a few years back?
Yeah, it is 100, but still. It's
okay, well, it used to be, what, 35?
Yeah.
I think. And yes. I remember over the years, we've had a couple folks that were way up in one of the big, I'm going to say it, construction companies, engineering construction companies, had a huge office in Houston, and believe it or not, they were run as an S corp, and that's back when it was 35. And so if you inadvertently added a 36 shareholder, theoretically that terminates the S corp status, and it freezes the deductibility of unused carryover losses. And I'm not sure, I've never had this happen to a client. I don't know, Dan, do you know, how do you unfreeze those losses? Or what is it, when you sell or liquidate the stock? I don't know. But let's leave that alone because we've got 12 more items to discuss here. Taxation on distributions of appreciated property deeded from an S corporation to the shareholder, even though you get no cash. And I have seen this happen with clients, and boy, this is no fun. As opposed to an LLC. The LLC, you can distribute assets to the shareholder or to the owners, the members, and you get the carryover basis of the property is held by the LLC, and it's not generally taxed, the appreciation. I guess that's the best way I can explain that, Dan. Can you clarify or enlighten any better?
No, that's exactly what it is. It's taxation without representation almost. There is representation being your cash, you know.
So appreciated property can be distributed to the owners of an LLC without tax in most cases, that cannot be when you deed property from an S corporation. So let's move on. Number nine, taxation on the liquidation of the entire S corp entity with appreciated assets, even though cash may not be realized. This essentially is very similar to the issue we just mentioned. So bottom line is you get the assets, they're taxable, and some of the assets that you, the cash may not be one of the assets that you get is the issue
because
here.
Because there isn't any.
Yeah, that's right. There may not have been any. There may be a reason that this stuff's being liquidated, right? So number 10, conversion of an S-corp with appreciated assets again to an LLC will result in tax liabilities even though cash may not be realized. Now, there's a couple of exceptions to that rule that we're in the process of executing on a couple of clients that, if you've got this situation, let's say you inadvertently ended up with a piece of real estate, significant appreciation that's held by your S corp, there are ways of getting that out, and it's not a DIY type strategy, but nonetheless, check with us and we'll see if you might be a candidate. Number 11, transfers of debt-free appreciated property to an S-corp is taxable if the contributing shareholder is not in control of the corporation immediately after the transfer. So this could be an issue, I presume, on a merger and acquisition is where you would see this. Just another item where the transfer triggers taxability that most shareholders aren't going to know about or think about. So you obviously want to do this with some professional advice or consultants. Number 12, transfers of property with debt to an S corporation do not increase the basis of the S corporation stock, which results typically in the loss of some deductions. I guess primarily depreciation would be the big one there, Dan. I can't think of what else might occur, but that would be one that comes to mind. What's number 13, Dan?
In the event of a shareholder split up, a stock ownership interest in an S-corp does not qualify for the 1031 exchange with no without any planning opportunities or with no planning opportunities. That's 1031 is a very technical thing in and of itself. When you throw another, S-corp problem in there, you really have created a bigger can of worms, I think. It's just something that can't be done virtually. I mean, there might be a way to work around it, but it's going to be a very time-consuming and expensive, I would think, professionally
speaking. There's some potential workarounds there, but as you say, it's not going to be easy to get those interests aligned before you do the 1031. 14, income and losses must be apportioned strictly in accordance with the exact number of shares owned with no variations of special allocations to different shareholders. This is probably one of the biggest issues and one of the big reasons that real estate investors want an LLC. I mean, I can look at every real estate private partnership that we work with, none of them are sharing strictly in accordance with the sharing ratio or the ownership. Correct, Dan? I mean, you've got people that are getting paid fees. You've got people that maybe didn't put a dollar for their capital sharing ratio. They were allocated an interest like the syndicator. We refer to it as the promote for the syndicator, where maybe the passive investors are putting up 80%, the syndicator, the sponsor, the lead partner, all same party, different terms, are being provided the 20%. That's their carry or their promote for putting the transaction together. And in the current world, along with a bunch of other fees, right? And by the way, speaking of fees, I want to refer to a comment I heard on the show just before ours today. And as those that listen to the Be a Planner show know, I take delight at times in pointing out things that I couldn't have heard it, but I did hear it. And I heard the host of the show today talking about real estate private syndications, which is not really his area, as I understand what he does there at Lifestyles. He's more into the single family, but apparently he stuck his toe into some syndications, and now he feels like he needs to discuss that on the air. And I heard him say, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, and I would invite that host to call or text me, text the show. I think that number was given out at the top. I'll give it to you now if you'd like. It's 713-581-0195. And I swear I heard him say that he will not and doesn't recommend others in that group. This is the Self-Made Millionaire platform. I'm sure you know who I'm referring to. That to have multiple lead partners, like seven or eight people is what I heard him say, that is like having a two-headed snake, or in that case, an eight-headed snake, akin to a serpent. That nothing but bad things can come out of that. The fees, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess he hasn't seen the video that Self-Made Millionaire himself has out on YouTube. It's also a radio broadcast on the platforms that they're on, talking about interviewing the most prolific investor and mentor and the self-made millionaire platform. This guy has invested as self-made millionaire says. He makes it sound like he's an owner of $1 billion of real estate. We know that's not true. If he's an owner of $1 billion in real estate, I'm an owner of over $2 billion because I have reviewed. Well, between Dan and I, let's look at it that way. We've constructed, reviewed, invested, and reported on easily over $2 billion of multifamily real estate. And I'm going to tell you the thing that's missing in saying that someone is the owner is taking the word "the" out and putting "an" in. Okay. And so, but the point is, I don't care if he's an owner of several thousand units just on his own. It's still darned impressive. You don't need to embellish. I would suggest a self-made millionaire. All the embellishment makes me question whether any of it's true. We know some of it is because I know some of the facts and details on those transactions since I was a member and a vendor supporting the members for, 18 years or more. But, Dan, that's amazing to me that they've got a guy running around on the air talking about how evil it is to have these fees, et cetera, and yet the most prolific person in that organization to this day is investing or is putting transactions together out on one of the major platforms, Realty Mogul. For those of you that know who I'm referring to, go search that platform. You should want to invest with him. The guy's amazing. I'm not complaining or otherwise suggesting that gentleman is not a first-class real estate investor. He is. He knows what he's doing. Been to the finish line many times. I would invest with him, and I guess I should do it through that platform. Why in the world would anybody join Self-Made Millionaire's platform that could otherwise invest direct with this guy, which you cannot do, apparently, as a member of that organization? I just can't imagine why you would want to pay the $20,000 membership cost if you're not non-accredited. Now, if you're a non-accredited investor, I get it. That's a good source for 506B transactions, which are the type, as the host today of that show very capably pointed out, that non-accredited, those with less than $1 million net worth, are blocked from investing in the 506C type syndication offering, which is what this gentleman has out on Realty Mogul. But he's partnered with other people. That's not his transaction. He's effectively, if you listen to the guy that was on earlier today, he's that serpent that he referred to. Correct, Dan? You heard the discussion, I believe. You were listening, correct?
I was listening, yes.
And so, anyway, I'd love the duplicity. You can almost count on anything you hear, whether you're at an in-person event with that group or you're listening to the radio, you're watching a YouTube video. It's 180 degrees the other way. Whatever is said, half of it's true. You won't know which half unless you've been around it for near 20 years like I was. And I sometimes stop and think, did they just say that? Do they not step back and listen occasionally to what they're teaching or what they're saying on the air or case studies? And of course, the people that have joined, they don't know. They're literally like sheep being led to the slaughter on some points. Now, on other points, this is a very credible organization. You won't know the difference. And if you want to know those differences, hey, fill out our intake forms out on BAPlanner.com. It's BEAPLANNER. And happy to have a chat with you, see if we can sync up with your objectives and save your $20,000. Let's put it into the first transaction. How about we do that? Because at the end of the day, that's really the reason you're joining any of the old school travel agent, quote unquote, type platforms. And in today's world, just like you don't need to buy your airplane ticket from the airline, you can get online, research it, compare, and make the purchase either through a third party, or if you do what I do, I love Google Flights. It takes me right into the itinerary on the carrier, makes it so much easier. It when you fly the way I have, it takes what's equivalent to an SAT exam, trying to juggle all the competing variables to come up with the best option, time-wise, plane type-wise, carrier-wise, stop-wise, layover-wise, and it turns that SAT exam into a pop quiz is the best way I can describe it, Dan, because it just makes it so much easier. But anyway, so I just wanted to interject that because, you know, I don't know, it just bugs me that sometimes these people, their real nature comes out. And I will promise you that the guy that was hosting that show today knows about this gentleman, but probably isn't aware, because it's not publicized, as it would not be if you're selling $20,000 memberships, that you would probably have a hard time finding people to plunk down the cash if they knew that, hey, they could go right out to RealtyMogul.com if they're accredited, which some of the people that join that group are. And it's just, I don't know, makes me question at times everything else that you hear. Okay, Dan, back to the list here. Let's see, we were on the issue of apportioning directly in accordance with ownership. With the LLC, we can apportion. One of our favorite strategies is to apportion the taxability with where the cash went. In other words, you know, you got a distribution, one partner got a distribution, maybe three others didn't for whatever reason, they agreed. And if that's the case, for this year's tax return, that one partner should pick up whatever income there was versus the three that didn't. So you can do that with an LLC. You can't do it with a S-Corp. Moving on quickly, S-Corporations cannot have as shareholders IRAs or other retirement accounts, corporations, partnerships, and non-resident aliens. Otherwise, it will lose the S-Corp status to become a C-Corp, and that's what we were talking about earlier with that termination. Those are all bad days, unless you're intending to, and that is, I guess, the flip side. Is if you want to bust an S-Corp election, well, here's your way of doing it, or here's your ways to do it. And that's just some of them. Right, Dan?
That's right.
There could be others. Okay, here's a key. This is big. Upon death, there is no step-up in basis for the assets within the S-Corporation. This is a deadly tax trap for surviving shareholders, including family members. That's a big one, and that's unlike the LLC. More to come on this in future weeks as we talk about family-type entities. Number 18, I think we're going to make it, Dan. We got about 10 minutes left, and we're down to the last five. It's actually 23 on our list. We added a few after we got to 20. The purchaser, or let's see, an S-Corp can only have... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I left off 18. 18, the purchaser of a stock interest in an S-Corp cannot get a step-up in basis for the appreciated assets within the S-Corp, unlike the elections we can make with new LLC owners. This potentially results in a loss of huge tax savings when it comes to the new owner's depreciation. Number 19, an S-Corp can only have one class of stock ownership. This goes back to not being able to disproportionately share the other attributes, losses, gains, cash flows, etc., in an S-Corp. So here, one class of stock ownership, not being able to treat entity owners differently, puts a limit on assorted legal and tax reduction planning strategies. Number 20, because of the above, the shareholder debt that resembles equity too closely could be treated as a second class of stock. We see these cases all the time. Assorted planners get too creative by half, I guess the expression goes, and they put something together on a sharing mechanism or some other metric that just resembles a different class of equity just a little bit too closely, and the IRS sees it and decides, hey, you've got a second class of stock, and we're terminating your S-Corp status. That's a bad day when that happens. Again, unless you intended it, and you really probably wouldn't do two classes if that was your intent. There's a lot easier ways to terminate it. Correct, Dan?
That's right. That's
okay. So
that's an ugly way to do it, I think, letting the IRS do it for you as opposed to you're doing it yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
Why don't you read number 21, Dan? This is a really good reason not to put your apartment building in an S-Corp.
If a profitable S-Corp has passive income that exceeds 25% of gross income for three consecutive years, there will be a loss of S-Corp status to a C-Corp status.
Boy, that is a bad day.
Your passive income is greater than 25% for a three-year period, you can lose your S-Corp status.
And that's what does that do what does that do to your taxability, Dan, at that point?
Your tax what? Ability?
Your taxability of that gain. Yeah. If you were to, let's say you were to sell the property, so do those losses that you've carried forward attached to your S corporation stock, or do you know right offhand? I don't think they do. I think they're frozen, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's what we would. I think they would be frozen, and that's a horrible situation when it comes to closing it out. I mean, it's just something you just got to avoid. I mean, don't do it.
Not only that, do C corps get capital gain treatment on sales like that?
Oh yeah,
that would otherwise. Say again?
Yes, but it's still,
okay.
Are you going to have a gain? Are you going to have a loss? I don't know. That's the key here.
Well, the C-Corp doesn't get capital gains. I think you mean the S-Corp might, but the C-Corp does not. So let's see here. I'm down to 22. There is the need to properly and timely make the S election and continually comply with the various federal and state requirements to preserve the S-Corp status. You know, it just occurs to me we need to delineate something here. I'm sure we've got some listeners that are saying, well, wait a minute. I've got an LLC, but I file an S-Corp return. You want to explain real quick, Dan, why that would be? I totally overlooked that. We should have mentioned that right up top before we got into
list. You were referring to an LLC which had been elected to be taxed as a partnership earlier in this. An LLC can elect to be taxed as an S-Corp. An LLC is simply a state designation where the C-Corp or the S-Corp or the partnership is an election made for federal tax purposes. The state still controls as far as what the LLC is. It is what it is, but for the federal tax purposes, we could be a S partnership or C corp.
That's true, and it costs a little bit less to form it. It does not have the formalities of annual meetings, et cetera. If you form just a straight C corp and then you file the election to be an S corp, then you've got all the above, whereas an LLC doesn't even require a written operating agreement, and it's what we call a check-the-box entity where we can elect for federal tax purposes to either be a partnership, file a Form 1065, we can be a C-Corp, file a Form 1120, or we can be an S-Corp. And so it doesn't matter how you got there for purposes of these rules that we're calling, or this list that we're calling out. Once you elect federal S-Corp status, all these rules are referring to that entity type, whether it was formed as a corporation at the state of Texas statute level or whether it was formed as an LLC. So let's go on. We've got the last one here. Boy, we're right on the dot here time-wise. A few states tax S-Corps, but not LLCs, and I don't have that list handy. I know in the state of Texas, the gross margin or the franchise tax, the otherwise unconstitutional tax that we entities have to pay, correct, Dan? You would agree with that, I'm assuming.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's more taxes down the drain. Well, in Texas, it's an equal amount of tax down the drain. So anyway, there's a few more S-Corp drawbacks. Those are the ones that Dan and I could come up with when we talked about this week. C corporations have most of the same disadvantages, plus their own pitfalls, double taxation. There is no capital gain. Capital gains get taxed at the higher ordinary income rates. Straight line depreciation recapture, accumulated earnings tax, and usually state taxes. So both S corps and C corps are what we would call tax indigestion for real estate investors. There's really no other way to describe it. So, Dan, now that we've got that list, I think we've run out of time. I was going to give you, and we'll save this for next week, it'll be a good segue, as to why the LLC operating agreement is so important. And we'll go through some samples, some examples of that. And then in future weeks, we're going to talk more about the use of LLCs, family LLCs, trust, and some assorted other vehicles that will fit our profile investor, especially the ones that are investing with outside of their retirement accounts, or in most cases, they're doing both. They're investing with their what we put together as a 401 trust, otherwise known as a solo K, and then they're also investing money that would be coming out of a money market account or some mutual funds, stocks, bonds, etc. And you know, a lot of people invest those funds never thinking twice about what would happen if they inadvertently injured, maimed, or God forbid, killed a pedestrian as they're driving home from the office. And those are just bad, bad outcomes if you have no asset protection to moderate whatever type of insurance or other assets you would have to settle the case. And so these entities give you a fighting chance if you're accounting for them correctly, and if you're otherwise dotting your I's, crossing your T's, and that's the kind of thing we'll help you with. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us again. I'm sorry we ran out of time. We were planning on having Amy call in again with some questions. We'll save those for next week. We'll try to plan better to leave a few minutes at the end. But we will be back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., the Be A Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.